powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
Joining us right now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is Robert Turbin. Turbo, what's up?
Hello, my family. How we doing today?
We are well. We have been talking about quarterbacks all day for the Seahawks. We're excited to talk about the conference championship games. Let's start with the Seahawks.
It's good to see Bump back at work today.
Turbo. Hey, Turbo.
Good to hear your voice, Bump.
Hey, Turbo. I got you. Hey, you just keep working on that left hand for that celebrity basketball game, all right?
Wow.
You're right. I am.
Bum, tell me why it sounded like a
threat. What y'all got for me today?
we were talking about some devil's advocate arguments when it comes to quarterback for the Seahawks.
Ooh.
Now, both of us thought Geno played well and Geno deserves his money, but we were challenging ourselves to try to come up with a different take. So I said they should go with Drew Lock. Bump said they should go with a quarterback at number 5 overall. I could tell it hurt him, but he did it. If you think of all the options Seattle has at quarterback for 2023, what do you personally like the most?
You're talking about the options that they currently have, right? It's not we're not talking about going out and acquiring somebody from another team.
I mean, it could be anything. If you're like, I think they should trade for, I don't know, like Lamar Jackson, it could be that.
I mean, you know, I think trading for Aaron Rodgers would be a nice, I think it's one of those things where it's like, when you look at the Rams and Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford, you know, and obviously Jared Goff wouldn't prove that he can be a franchise quarterback in Detroit, but, you know, the Rams felt like they were getting a slight upgrade in Matthew Stafford, and they went on and won the Super Bowl, obviously. And, you know, you get somebody of Aaron Rodgers' caliber. You're not trying to disrespect anybody here, but he's obviously had a fantastic career. And if it fits within the salary cap, of course, because that's always the main thing, there's a little scenario right there, because you're talking about a team that with a couple upgrades on defense, is right in the thick of things as far as winning a championship. So to me, that would be my outlandish hot take.
I like it.
For the quarterback spot.
Turbo, when you look at...
I'm good with Geno.
Good with Geno. You look at the NFC and the AFC championship games, you got two different type of approaches, right? AFC, it's all about the quarterbacks. You got Pat Mahomes, you got Joe Burrow over there, and they're going to throw the ball across the yard. It's very quarterback-focused. On the other side, you got some quarterbacks too. Obviously, Jalen Hurts, you got Brock Purdy. But I feel like those teams on the NFC are more balanced-type team. They can run the football. They play good defense. Which style do you think is more sustainable when it comes to success after this year and going forward for the next couple of years?
Oh, man, that's really tough. That's a great question, Blunt, because – you know, historically, the Chiefs have sustained success. I mean, this is their fifth straight AFC title game. And if you look at what they've been able to do in the run game, I don't want to say it's been non-existent, but, you know, it certainly hasn't been of the caliber of the 49ers or the Philadelphia Eagles, right? But they've still been able to obviously maintain this dominance over the AFC. And then same thing with the Bengals. You know, the Bengals, their run game is up and down. Now, they really showed out on the ground against the Bills last week, and I think that's really helped them. I think it really helps them stay balanced. But I think anytime you can incorporate and have a consistent run game within your system, to me, that's the type of system that always sustains longevity. Like, I mean, we're obviously in a quarterback-driven league, so you want to be able to throw the ball consistently, and you want to be able to have a great quarterback that can overcome some of your weaknesses as it pertains to your football team. But if you can complement him with, you know, a sustainable run game, then I think the longevity as far as, you know, being in contention championship-wise is more sustainable in my eyes. But if it's just running back centric, Bump, like the Tennessee Titans, everything revolves around King Henry, that's not sustainable in today's NFL anymore.
Why do you think it's not sustainable? I mean, I agree with you, but I just want to hear more of an elaboration because, Turbo, I think there are people that are like, why not?
Well, it's a quarterback-driven league, right. and you have to be able to score points. And this is not, you know, we don't live in the days of, quite frankly, where you have these, you know, dominant defenses. Now, look, I don't want to take away from what the Eagles have been able to do defensively this year. The 49ers, you know, one of the best defenses in the league. They're number one in a lot of categories. But you still got to be able to, you know, you still have to be able to put up points. And I think that's one of the things we're going to see in this game between the Eagles and the 49ers. I think we'll see that the Eagles just have a little bit too much for the 49ers to be able to handle, just my personal opinion. But if everything is kind of centered around your runner, you know, you're in today's NFL, you're not going to get a whole bunch of, you know, 50, 60, 70-yard house calls from your running back. And that's where, you know, the quarterback-driven league kind of comes into play.
Turbo, when you look at – me and Stacey were talking about the type of leadership for each team, and I was – it got me excited, man, because I remember growing up, you saw, like, a certain type of leadership, right? He had to be clean-cut, quarterback, say the right things. And now we're seeing all of it. We're seeing Brock Purdy, who's that clean-cut dude, love to see it. You got Jalen Hurts. He'll come through with a hoodie and a chain on. Love to see it. You got Joe Burrow over there who'll come through with a mink and a cigar on. Love to see it. You know, and then you got Pat Mahomes who's just this quirky little nerd over there, man. What do you think about the leadership and how the NFL has kind of expanded when it comes to accepting all types of leaderships?
I think it's great, man. Just anytime you can be put in a position where you can just authentically be yourself. I mean, that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it in anything. That's the way to do it with you and Stace, right? With what you guys do on air, you know, you just want to be bumping Stace. That's it, right? You know, for me and for anybody who's working in any career, man, if you can be authentic with yourself, that's a win. And let's not forget. I mean, I don't want to take away from those guys and their leadership, their quarterbacks, and we understand that. But just because they're the ones that are going up to the podium and basically, you know, kind of being the face of the franchise doesn't necessarily mean that they are the leaders of their respective teams. You know what I'm saying? It could be, you know, it could be a defensive lineman who doesn't do interviews, who doesn't get all the attention. He's the one that kind of leads the troops. He's the one that galvanizes the guy. So you never know behind closed doors, but as far as their personalities are concerned from a quarterback position, I love the mix up, man. It's entertaining.
No, absolutely agree. I wanted to shift gears, look at the conference title games that are happening this weekend. The Bengals went from struggling against the Ravens to suddenly being a favorite to get back to a Super Bowl after an amazing performance against the Bills. Do you have them favored over Kansas City, or are you still going Chiefs?
No, I have them favored over Kansas City. I really do. You know, sometimes you just have an edge over a team. You know, Bengals beat them the last three times. Doesn't mean Kansas City can't win. But I do think they have an edge. I think Eli Apple needs to shut his mouth a little bit, though, and just go out there and play football. But that's another conversation for another day. But as far as who's going to come out on top, you know, I got the Bengals. I got the Bengals. I just think that they've got a few more weapons on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, I think they're a little bit better. And, you know, I think that, you know, I've had a high ankle sprain before. I know other guys, other players who've had, you know, high ankle sprains. And so I think Pat Mahomes is going to be fine, but he is going to be somewhat limited in his ability to escape some pressures.
We got, I love this weekend, Turbo. I'm excited for this matchup. And we were looking at these teams and these coaches and trying to figure out who has the most to lose and the most to gain when it comes to these players. So I'm going to start off with who has the most to lose when you look at the AFC matchup and NFC matchups.
Who has the most to lose?
Yeah, most to lose.
As far as player or team?
Team. Let's go team.
It's the Chiefs, man. I think it's the Chiefs. you know, the Chiefs have for a long time has been, you know, they've been, we kind of see them as this, you know, they're the kings of the AFC in a sense, right? They've got the highest expectations every year. And for the most part, they meet them. But, you know, aside from their lone Super Bowl win that they have, you know, over the 49ers, they've gotten to this AFC championship game and, you know, they've kind of fallen short, aside from that one time. And then, you know, obviously they went and played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and they lost that game back in 2020. But listen, you know, this is an opportunity for the Bengals to then kind of take over and be seen in that light that we've seen the Kansas City Chiefs in for so many years. So I think it's the Chiefs that have the most to lose as far as that matchup is concerned. If the Bengals lose, you almost feel like they'll be right back.
That's how I feel about Cincinnati. I said Cincinnati has the least to lose or like maybe the most to gain just because it's like people thought you could be eliminated by the Ravens. Like people last year thought you wouldn't be able to get back to a Super Bowl. But hear me out, Turbo. What do you think about the 49ers as the most to lose, given that they are a team whose most prominent pieces are not necessarily at quarterback? Like, I don't doubt that Mahomes is going to be able to help lead the Chiefs back to a Super Bowl and have a chance next year or the year after or the year after. I wonder how many more pieces San Francisco can keep together fully healthy.
Yeah, from the NFC side, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the 49ers with the most to lose because, you know, here again, they've kind of sustained somewhat of this dominance, if we want to even call it that. But they've continually fallen short. You know, they made it to the Super Bowl in 2020, fell short to the Chiefs, right? And in the NFC Championship game, you know, last year, falling short. They've fallen short in that game a couple of times, actually, when they've been had those opportunities. So, you know, for me, it's the 49ers. We don't really know what their future holds right now. You look at the Eagles; they're a young football team. They've got guys under contract for a long time. They've got less question marks, in my opinion. So, to me, it's the 49ers. And if you look at the NFC, also, you know, other teams are getting better. Seahawks are getting better. They're going to be better teams. They're going to be improved next year in that conference. So. It remains to be seen, but definitely out of those two teams, the Eagles 49ers, Niners have the most to lose there.
And let's talk about this run game before you get you up out of here, man. We know that the Niners and Philly have great run games, right? You got Miles Sanders over there. You got McCaffrey. You got Elijah Mitchell for the Niners. But there's this rookie, man, young Pacheco over there with the Kansas City Chiefs who's impressed me a lot, man. When you look at the run game on the other side, the matchup we expect to be a lot of football thrown around the yard. What do you think about that matchup between Pacheco and Joe Mixon?
Yeah, that's going to be a big one to look out for, right? Because, you know, I thought for the Bengals when they played the Bills, I'm like, man, whichever run game, because, their run games haven't been great all season long. You look at Joe Mixon, other than that playoff game against the Bills, he only had one other 100-yard game all season long, right? So he hadn't really been as consistently productive as we've known him to be in the past. And the Bills, well, their run game has pretty much been, you know, almost non-existent, you know, not to offend anybody, aside from Josh Allen. They put everything on their shoulders. So I'm like, okay, whichever one of these run games can spark, that team is probably going to dominate the football game. And what happened? You know, you get Joe Mixon going over 100 yards, and the Bengals end up dominating that football game. So I feel somewhat similar about this matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs, where, you know, whichever run game can really get going can really spark, you know, either one of these teams. But, you know, with Isaiah Pacheco over in Kansas City, what he's brought to that backfield that Kansas City hasn't had since probably Kareem Hunt, to be honest with you, Bump, is just that physicality, just that ability to you know, get downhill, break tackles. Like, they've had other guys who can, you know, slither and, you know, get around the edge, and they've got good speed and quickness to them, but not a guy who can get downhill, break tackles, and really put the defense on their heels. And that's what Isaiah Pacheco has really brought to the backfield for the Kansas City Chiefs. So it'll be an interesting matchup. He's been more consistent than Joe Mixon has. And the Bengals are going to need that if they want to have an opportunity to beat Kansas City.
All right. Great analysis with one of our favorites, Robert Turbin. Turbo, thanks for joining us. Have a good weekend. Enjoy these games. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, Turbo.
All right. Bump, you don't want that turnaround jumper either, dog.
Hey.
One-on-one, any day.
One-on-one. Ankles are snatched, Turbo.
Anytime. You know what I'm saying? I got the step back. I got the turnaround, Jay. I got it all.
All right. You too swole for any of that, Turbo. You too swole.
you say that's the... I'm going to get you back for that one. All right, y'all.
Bye, Turbo. All right, it's Football Friday, powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Bump, would you describe Turbo as a bender?
He's a bender. If I ever saw
one. You think he's a duster? You calling him a duster right now, Bob?
Oh, man. Can you see Turbo? You ever seen, remember that movie Cool Runnings?
Yes.
The first time they walk on
cool
ice.
Runnings.
That's going to be Turbo on them skates, man.
Well, speaking of the skates, Kraken All-Star Matty Beniers has been ruled out for tonight and tomorrow night after suffering a cheap shot from Vancouver's Tyler Myers on Wednesday night. What's the real headline?
Only one thing to say here. Our revenge on Canada starts tonight. Calgary, you weren't a part of it. Doesn't matter. You can get it.
Retribution.
Everyone can get it, okay? Matty Beniers didn't deserve to go down like that. Now, thankfully, it doesn't sound like it was like... It doesn't sound like anything that's like maybe overly serious than that. I don't love that the All-Star game is still in question for him. I don't love that they've already ruled him out for two games in a row. I don't love that he wasn't part of morning skate. But I think it could have been a lot worse. At least that's what it seems from the jump, Bump. So let's hope that he's back after those missed two games.
They gotta treat Myers like they did back in my day. We used to play football. Whenever there's a cheap shot on one of our guys, you get back to the huddle, and all you do is say his number, 23. Ooh. And everyone knows.
Dang.
You get a shot at 23, you light his you-know-what.
Did you ever deliver a cheap shot?
Me? No, I'm too small for cheap shots, man. You know what I mean? All my stuff was head up. Let's get active.
The issue with Tyler Myers being the hunted now is that he's 6'8". Who do you have on the Kraken that can match up?
Yeah, and he's all neck.
Jimmy Oleksiak's the only guy that could probably match him size for size.
Well, guess what you're doing today, Jamie?
You're finding somebody on Calgary's roster who has nothing to do with this. Like, dude, what are you coming after me for?
It doesn't matter. We're doing baseball rules. Okay?
Everybody's got a chin.
Yeah.
Everyone has a chin. Clip that thing.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Sean Payton denied reports he's worried about a potential power struggle with a member of the Broncos ownership. What's the real headline?
Well, that's exactly what someone who's worried about a potential power struggle with a member of the Broncos ownership would say. I don't believe it for a second. No, I actually, you know what? I'll actually give Sean Payton credit here. I think that it seemed like a really wild story. It felt very gossipy. It's why I loved it so much. I wonder how it got out and from whom it was leaked.
Man, Sean Payton's a vet in the game. He's not going to do anything to compromise relationships, even if there is some truth to that. Maybe he hollered at one of his boys and told him how he really feels and it leaked a little bit. But Sean Payton is never going to do anything to compromise relationships because he knows how the NFL works.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're in, you are in. You'll be recycled. You'll be a coach for however long you want to coach. You can go upstairs, be an executive. He's in such a good place when it comes to the NFL. He wouldn't do anything to compromise it, even if this is true.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Rams are hiring recently fired Jets offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur to the same position. What's the real headline?
Are we sure it was Robert Saleh's decision to part ways with a coordinator who was immediately hired by Sean McVay? Like, are we positive that was a Robert Saleh decision? Maybe it was. They had a bottom eight finish offensively for two consecutive seasons. It wasn't a great offense, and we know that. But I always find it interesting that a guy like that is swooped up almost immediately by a really brilliant offensive mind. And it makes me wonder if maybe Johnson or part of Jets ownership got involved and said, you need to do something because people are mad. So make some kind of change.
I'm not surprised he got swooped up. We just talked about it. That's what happens in this league. You know, you get dropped by one team. Like the just like NFL players say the NFL is a frat, it's the same thing for coaches. At one point, you either coach with that guy or know someone who coached with them who was going to vouch for him. And the thing about anybody going to the Los Angeles Rams as an offensive coordinator, you're like offensive coordinator B. You know, you're going to help with the game plan. You might call a few plays.
Yeah.
But when it's time to win, Sean McVay is going to put on that headset, put the mic over his mic and say, all right, this is what we're going to do. So not surprising. And you're right. When your offense struggles as much as the New York Jets often struggled, something has to happen. Who's the first guy to go? This guy calling the plays.
That's right. This hour of Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up in NFL headlines, not so great injury news for Tua Tagovailoa, who will miss the Pro Bowl games. Also, a favorite for a head coaching position, but would you want this head coaching gig? That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, heading to the rest of the NFL here, Bump. We are starting in Miami, where quarterback Tua Tagovailoa will be unable to participate in the pro games. He's going to sit out the event because he remains in concussion protocol. This is more than a month after suffering a season-ending hit on Christmas Day. He had, what, three concussions in the 2022 season? At least two.
Two diagnosed, but probably three.
Exactly, and obviously one was incredibly controversial because he went back into play, not only that, but then played the following week. Now, at the end of the season, if I remember correctly, Dolphins GM Chris Greer was asked about Tua's history with concussions, particularly this season, and he said, from everything we've read, it doesn't seem like having concussions suddenly makes you more prone to concussions than anyone else who would play the sport. Like, it's always going to be a risk for anyone. However, the conversation starting today, Bump, is a very understandable one, which is Tua looking at potentially needing to, I don't want to say like end your career, that's really dramatic, but it's really scary to suffer that many concussions in such a short period of time.
Nah, it is. Thankfully, he has a whole offseason to kind of reevaluate, go through testing and see where he is, but he's a football player. He's going to want to get back out there. He's going to want to play the game. I encourage him, and I don't know what research is out there, but I'd like to know how concussions affect you later in life. I'm sure there's some type of effect there. Just make an informed and educated decision on how to move forward. That's all you can ask for with him and the Dolphins, but he's a ball player. He's going to want to play.
Yeah. All right, next story here. We are heading to San Francisco. Now, you had a take on this for Four Down Territory, which we're going to be able to get back to, but I wanted to address it here. NFL Network is reporting 49ers defensive coordinator D'Amico Ryans has emerged as the favorite for the Texans head coaching job. I know that the saying is always say yes to a great opportunity, Bump, but would you say yes to this one?
I ain't touching it. Not with a 10-foot pole. No, sir. I'll go on as an assistant if I'm trying to get my career started, but man, you get labeled with the guy who lost X amount of games in Texas. It follows you for your career, especially if that's your first stop as a head coach. I wouldn't touch that.
Yeah, the Texans, Curtis, you the other day said you'd hate to be in the Texans spot. Like being at the bottom of the totem pole in the NFC is one thing because
you
can dig your way out. I mean, we've seen teams go from the bottom of a power ranking to number one. Don't forget where Seattle started the season. They didn't end up in the Super Bowl or fighting for one, but they went certainly much further than people thought. It's just a weakened conference right now. You can't say that for the AFC.
God, the AFC quarterback situation is so stacked. And there's a lot of good teams in the AFC, too. Mahomes, Burrow, Herbert, Lawrence, Josh Allen. Like, it is ridiculous the amount of great young quarterbacks there are in that conference. If the Houston Texans go with a quarterback, and we're kind of assuming that it's Bryce Young at this point until proven otherwise, like, is Bryce Young going to be better than any of those guys? Like, it's so hard to play at the level that any of them are playing at. Like, Houston fans probably like, man, talk to me in 2 decades when there's an opportunity outside of these like 6 quarterbacks.
I don't feel altogether bad for a city that's had a World Series very recently and a team that's not going anywhere in the Astros. But it really is a bummer to be bad for a really long time. A lot of franchises have experienced it, especially here in Seattle, the Seahawks in the 90s, the Mariners for the last 20 years, missing the playoffs. Like, I feel for a team in that position and a fan base in that position. I don't even know if the Texans are going to get Bryce Young. Like, what if another team swoops in there, Bump?
Wherever Bryce Young ends up, God bless you. Because yeah. It's not going to be a great situation, especially if it's in Texas with the Texans. But we shall see.
All right, let's head to Carolina. Pro Football Talk reporting that Frank Reich's daughter took a job with the Panthers on January 8, 2 weeks before it was announced that Frank would be named to the team's as the team's head coach. Frank Reich already has a history with the Panthers, so it's not necessarily like this somehow gave it away or established some kind of favoritism there. Like, didn't he begin his career with that organization? I think. I need to double check. But
yeah, it looks like they already have something in place.
Yeah.
You know, when you hire a man's daughter, then you wait a little bit and then you hire him. But that's how the NFL works. Does that surprise you? You know, they probably knew from the beginning who they actually wanted.
Yeah.
And the interview was just a formality. They said, look, man, we got to get our Rooney Rule in, you know what I'm saying? But we got to hire another couple guys or interview a couple guys. But they know who they want. And that happens with a bunch of employers, mm-hmm. You're not just in football. Like, they know who they want, but they got to open up the job and have people apply just to say they went through the process. That seems like that's what happened over there in Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. NFL.com has their list of players who are going to earn big money this offseason. Are we once again going to see a boom in quarterback contracts? Because don't forget that Joe Burrow is set to receive an extension, could be playing in a second consecutive Super Bowl. Also up for a potential extension is third-year quarterback Justin Herbert for the Chargers. Obviously, Jalen Hurts with the Eagles. And while I wouldn't include his salary up there with those guys, Daniel Jones is looking for a payday too as an unrestricted free agent. Do we see Hurts, Herbert, or Burrow drastically reset the market?
Drastically, no, but they're going to push it. That's what happens every year or every time there's a group of quarterbacks who are up. The salary cap goes up. Mm-hmm. The quarterback pay goes up. That's what happens. This is what I want to see, though. I want to see what Daniel Jones gets offered by anybody and then see how people view him and Geno Smith. What type of light do they view them in? You know what I mean? Are they in the same boat? Are they going to offer Geno Smith the same as someone would offer Daniel Jones? That's probably the more interesting situation to me, because you know that these quarterbacks are going to get 50, 55, 60 mil. You know what I mean? That's just what happens when it comes to quarterbacks. What about these middle-class guys? What's that number going to look like?
I'm also really, really fascinated by that pool. And I think that the one thing that people always have against Geno is not only that he had 1 year, but, oh, well, he's turning 33, right? Like, Daniel Jones is 25 years old. This will be his first non-rookie contract. But when does age become less relevant if someone truly outplays someone else? Like, if a 32-year-old quarterback is genuinely better as a quarterback than a 25-year-old, why does it matter if you're getting the 25-year-old or not?
Because it's a young man's game, and it's all about...
But does that matter as much with quarterback if you're looking for a short-term answer?
Nah, it's still leverage.
Yeah.
It's still a conversation. Does it really matter in reality? I don't think Daniel Jones and Geno Smith, their age matters. But when it comes down to figuring out, okay, how far can I push this? What's low ball and what's too much? Age is always going to be a factor.
Yeah. All right. Let's head around the league for some other random updates here. We already know that Patrick Mahomes will start against the Bengals. He was a full participant in practice this week, still dealing with that high ankle sprain. They've got a wide receiver, Justin Watson, obviously not near the top of that depth chart, who was a non-participant. Otherwise, the Chiefs look fairly healthy heading into this one. The Eagles also pretty healthy. Jalen Hurts remains off the injury report. Sirianni said he's ready to go. Again, no surprise. And Christian McCaffrey, who has been on the injury list, either missing practice or being limited all week long, did return to practice today. It was his first time practicing this week. Kyle Shanahan had already said that Christian McCaffrey would not be missing this one. But even being able to return to practice at least bodes well for him being as close to full strength as he can during this game.
Not worried at all about McCaffrey.
Yeah.
Not at all. This is just resting your horse. He's helped you get here. He changed the course of your season. He's that important. Doesn't need to practice at all.
Christian McCaffrey, I'm looking up his Pro Football Reference page for total games missed. I know that he missed a ton of games, obviously, between 2020 and 2021. But I remember earlier this year with Carolina, people being like, once again, here we go, Christian McCaffrey dealing with a hamstring injury. He started all six games. it's a bummer for him that he was fine for the first 3 years of his career, obviously became a first-team All-Pro in 2019, started all 16 games, then dealt with, essentially appeared in 10 games over 2 years, and has been unable to brush off that label despite appearing in all 17 regular season games this year.
I think as soon as fans see your name on the injury report, then they start to wonder, especially when you missed a bunch of games, and it just sticks with them. Like, oh, yeah. He's always hurt. But yeah. I don't think people realize that at this level of football, a lot of guys don't need to practice as much as you think. You're all about maintenance. You're all about making sure you make it through the season. Now, in college, it's a different thing. They force you to practice. You're not being paid, at least back in my day, like these guys are getting paid. Yep. Nowadays, these guys getting these NIL deals. They might pump the brakes a little bit on guys practicing when they're injured. But this is the NFL. It's a professional league. You do not want to risk your multi-million-dollar investment over a practice.
All right. It is a Football Friday powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook, but we are shifting gears, talking Mariners with Brandon Gustafson, the in-house reporter here who covers all of Seattle sports for SeattleSports.com, is awesome in studio, knows a ton about the Mariners, but, you know, normally, Bump, we pepper Brandon with questions about the Mariners. Brandon today, young BG, is coming in with a take, and he's ready. And I have not warned him about it, but I heard him say it earlier, and I'm going to force him to say it on air because I really, really liked it. And it was about a player that we are not giving enough credit to on the Mariners that we should be more excited about, and we're not. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Joining us now in studio for some Mariners talk, Brandon Gustafson, BG of SeattleSports.com. Hey, BG.
What up?
We're so excited to have you. Bump's very happy to hear you have your notebook, right, Bump?
Yeah, it's not official unless he walks through with a notebook.
I know. I've come in here before without the notebook, and just feel Bump like raising his eyebrows, like, this guy's not ready.
No.
This guy doesn't know.
That's exactly right. We've been very disappointed before, but today, not so much. I teased that you would come in with a hot take. Normally, Bump and I just pepper you with questions about this team, and you have plenty of opinions, but normally you have to put up with all our questions. But earlier, you said that there was a player on this team that not enough people are excited about.
Well,
is it Julio?
No, it's not Julio Rodriguez. I feel like Mariner fans are pretty excited about him. No, it just kind of goes to the general idea of what the fan base seems to think about the offseason so far, which I think we've talked about. It seems like people are disappointed that they didn't go out, make more moves, make more splash moves, notable type deals, whatnot. But I really do think that people need to understand that Teoscar Hernandez, come season's end, might be the Mariners' second-best player. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal ball player. And something that I heard when the Mariners first made that trade is, oh, well, he wasn't as good as in 2020 or 2021. And that's something I kind of wanted to talk about. He got off to a slow start because he had an oblique injury in April, missed some time, came back, horrible month of May, just really, really bad. From that point on, 867 OPS. He was slugging 536. He had 23 home runs over his last 106 games. 867 OPS, that would have been 14th in baseball, higher than Julio had all of last year. And we all agree Julio had a phenomenal year last year. You know, yeah, pretty good, right? No, so it's just one of those things where I totally get, like, okay, you have a platoon at second base now. You have a platoon in left field right now on paper. It's not super clear who your DH is going to be, but I really, really do think that people need to understand that the Mariners got a phenomenal ball player in Teoscar Hernandez, and he's probably somebody that, if you're looking at this free agent class, this last one, probably would have been the second best outfielder available behind Aaron Judge.
All right, BG. If BG says it, I will put it in my notepad and say, all right, let's see how this thing
Oh, you got happens. A notepad too. Cool.
No, has an iPad.
I got an iPad.
Okay. He talks about it a lot. In fact, he bragged to my face about his own handwriting in his iPad. But it's actually pretty good. So I was like, all right.
Hey, I dig it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, BG, I forgot who said it, but all I do is listen to 710 when I'm in the car with my kids. It drives them crazy. But I'm listening to 710. Man, I wish I could remember who said it, but someone said that Colton Wong is low-key a top 10 second baseman in the majors. Your thoughts on that?
Well, second base, just for some general ideas, second base isn't the deepest position in baseball. It's not. But Colton Wong is somebody who, last year in particular, really, really good numbers against right-handed pitching, had some struggles against lefties that typically he hasn't had. But in his career, a phenomenal defender at second base. I know that he's been dealing with some injuries last year. That's Todd Rosiak, a Milwaukee beat writer. That's something that he told Wyman and Bob right after the trade happened was, Colton told him up front, like, I was dealing with some injuries, kind of some core leg type stuff that slowed him down a little bit. But overall, I mean, a lot of people look at the error numbers, the issues against lefties. He still posted a 3.1 wins above replacement, which was the same as Ty France. That had been fifth on the Mariners last year. That's pretty good. If a down year is a three war player, you're getting a pretty good player. You know, it's unclear how much he's going to play overall because we have heard maybe a platoon situation with Dylan Moore, but he's somebody who has track record. He's somebody that the last 2 years since he's been traded from since he went from St. Louis to Milwaukee, that he's somebody that's kind of tapped into his power a little more extra bases, a few more home runs than he had when he was with the Cardinals. So it's something to keep an eye on. But I really do think the Mariners are getting a pretty solid ball player there. And even if it is a platoon situation, a platoon of Dylan Moore and Colton Wong should be a pretty good one for the Mariners.
I was ignoring you and Curtis talking earlier in the sports pit to each other.
That's like every day.
Though. Every day
yeah,
I do
Curtis
that.
And I just nerd out.
Yeah, it's so
cool.
Annoying. But you guys were talking about a recent ranking that came out where the Mariners lineup was
eight. ESPN, C-Rod, you remember the name of the writer?
Bradford Doolittle.
Yeah, Bradford Doolittle. It was shared by Buster Olney, which is how I saw it. He ranked all 30 major league lineups, and I think to the surprise of many, the Mariners came in at seventh. Right. And again, like with how people feel about the offseason, even coming off of last year, because the last 2 years, even when winning 90 games, the lineup was kind of the issue. Like, I don't think a lot of people would see, you know, up here in the Pacific Northwest, not a lot of people would see this lineup as seventh best in baseball. But it's something I was talking to Curtis about. It seems like the idea of what the Mariners have and haven't done and what they do and don't have seems like it's a little more pessimistic up here than it is just kind of nationally, which is definitely interesting. But they've got some good guys in the lineup. You obviously got to account for some growth with Julio, who's a legitimate MVP candidate next year. Cal Raleigh's a phenomenal ball player. Gino Suarez had a great year last year. Like they've got some dudes in the lineup, especially in the middle of that lineup, but there obviously are going to be some questions. Left field, that's a little bit of a questionable platoon situation, and then the DH spot, they just don't really have two clear guys there, but yeah, they do have some impact bats that should make some noise this year.
What, how do you feel about the approach of the Mariners this offseason? You mentioned, right, they've gotten better at second base, little platoon in the outfield, see what happens over there, or platoon at second base. How do the analytics fit into all of this, and how do you feel the analytics department is with the Mariners? Are they ahead of the curve? Are they trying new things? What are you hearing about that?
Well, I think that the analytics world is interesting because I know with the NFL, we kind of talk about it being a copycat league. Somebody kind of gets out ahead, and then you see a lot of teams kind of going to catch up. The Mariners for a while were a little bit behind in a lot of that stuff, and you saw teams like the Astros and the Braves, they've kind of been ahead of the curve with a lot of that stuff. But the Mariners are a pretty analytical team. If you look at the last few years, I think defensively especially, you'll see that they were one of the top teams defensively in terms of taking advantage of the shift and whatnot, which is why it's going to be really interesting to see what they end up doing this year. As far as the offseason approach, I think that they identified a few things with some of these targets. You look at Teoscar Hernandez, for instance, on top of just the overall good numbers, the good slash line, he's one of the premier hitters in baseball when it comes to just hitting the ball hard. And when you hit the ball hard and you hit it in the air, typically good things are going to happen
for
you.
People say that.
Yeah, they do say that. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I think they went out and identified a few guys. Colton Wong certainly has some good stuff going for him in his career, even with a down year last year. Identified a few guys that can do some good specific things. Obviously, we were all hoping for the splash signing, right? Yeah. Or the big splash trade. You know, you talk about Brian Reynolds for so long. I wrote about it, like Trey Turner made so much sense for this team, and then you get to 11 years and 300 plus million. You kind of see why some teams wouldn't be able to do that. But, you know, in terms of the offseason, I think they did add two really good pieces in Colton Wong and Teoscar Hernandez. But as far as the rest of it, you know, it's a little bit of a question mark, left field especially. And I've told you guys before, I really think and hope that this team goes out and adds one more bat, be it trade, free agency, what have you. I think there is just one more spot in that lineup that could be solidified and could make this team that much better.
All right. I was going to ask about any potential prospects we should keep our eye on, or if there's any really young guys that are going to be in camp with this team, but I'm out of time, so I guess I can tease that for next time. Or do you guys have anything coming out on SeattleSports.com?
not in that realm, but Jerry DePoto was on with us yesterday with Brock and Salkin. Well, I guess Aaron Goldsmith, the Aaron Goldsmith show, really yesterday.
Yeah, killed it.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. So some really interesting stuff on Kelenic, and Jerry had some really good stuff about the trade market and why he thinks that's going to start heating up, and that'll be up on the site here just in a little bit.
All right, keep an eye out for that. SeattleSports.com. He is Brandon Gustafson. Thanks so much, Brandon.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
BG.
All right. Coming up next, we are bringing on another guest. Mark Ross is going to join us for a preview of these games and then a little bit of a look around the rest of the NFL. Don't go anywhere.